can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, I'm not very sure if it's professional to announce this publicly, Don, but there's not many interviews that we do that I'm completely unprepared for. But I'm unprepared for this. But and you mentioned some time ago, a couple of weeks ago, that a chap had got in touch with you called Topher Field.
No. I was alerted to his work.
A documentary called Battleground Melbourne.
That's it.
Right. And you said, why don't you get this man on? And I said, what does he do, Don? And you said, well, I don't know. I said, well, why don't you, I'm asking you now, why don't you tell us what Topher Field does in the Battleground Melbourne documentary, what it's about and why he's here with us today?
Well, I was... since I've been doing this show, I thought nobody in the media has really recapped what has happened to Melbourne over the past 2 years. None of the media outlets, be it the newspaper or the television, has done anything and retraced the whole sequence of events. And somebody alerted me to this documentary. I think it was Peter Horsey. Alerted me to this documentary, and I had great difficulty finding it, which I'd like to ask him about, until I got a young person who knows their way around the website, because you just can't Google it or YouTube it or something, and I'd like to know the reason why, because there's a couple of other things I've been alerted to since that I don't know what you call these. But there is a documentary called
Battleground Melbourne.
I think it's very good. It's a first attempt, I understand, from what it was said. There's a couple of things that I would like to ask him as far as content. But we have the creator of that, and it was the money actually to produce this documentary came from crowdfunding, because he was jailed for organising the marches that happened in Melbourne. The police came around and took him away. It was all very amicable. It was shown on the documentary. And out of this, through crowdfunding, there was excess money and the documentary was made.
Don, what a fantastic introduction. Well done. That explains it exactly. And the reason probably the mainstream media wouldn't give it credence or too much publicity is that they're either committed to the narrative the government want to push out, or they're intimidated by someone having a counter point of view, and it would be under the umbrella of those inverted air quotes misinformation. So well done and well explained. And we have the producer and the man in question with us here on You Cannot Be Serious, called Topher Field. Did we get any of that, or did Don get any of that right or wrong? Or
look,
welcome, Topher.
Thank you so much. It's very nice to be here. I do appreciate it. And Don was spot on with a number of things there. This is a subject that a lot of the mainstream media don't want to touch. They don't want to be marginalised, and they don't want to be associated with those crazy right-winger neo-Nazi types. I mean, we've been called every name under the sun, and most of it's not true. But nevertheless, once that smear campaign starts, people don't want to touch you, they don't want to be associated with you. And it's going to take another year or so, I think, and things like Battleground Melbourne should hopefully help to get journalists at large to start to realise, actually, those smears were never true in the first place. These are actually ordinary people, ordinary, average, hardworking people that have been very, very badly hurt by the
So Topher, the genesis of this was the fact that you thought the draconian and over-the-top reach of the Victorian government about what we can and can't do and what we're being told what to do and the co-opting of the police force into doing their bidding for them, you thought this is hardly democracy, and having a counterpoint of view is not illegal and it shouldn't be frowned at, but it suddenly is, and you've found yourself in legal strife. I didn't know that you'd gone to jail.
Yeah, well, not to prison. I was arrested. And then they did a bit of a Rex hunt with me. They caught me, kissed me, and let me go. But from my perspective, I've been a part of the protest since the very first protest.
What are you protesting about?
Okay, so the lockdowns And then once the mandatory vaccines, I'm not opposed to vaccines, I've had most of them, but once they made them mandatory, that became another topic that we were protesting about. Those have been the two causes of the protests. I released a video in March of 2020 looking at the actual science coming out of places like the Center for Evidence-Based Medicine, looking at the things being said by people like Professor John Ioannidis, actual epidemiologists around the world, and comparing that to the political response here in Victoria and highlighting the difference. These people, the Victorian government, they were not listening to the science. They were hand-picking the scientists that they wanted to listen to. And I began pointing that out in March of 2020 because it was already obvious then. By April of 2020, two weeks to flatten the curve had turned into, oh, we'll just keep going. We're just going to head for COVID zero. We were never asked. We never agreed to that. So I began to speak up, and I spoke at the very first anti-lockdown protest then. The police were there. They took a pretty hands-off approach. That wasn't too dramatic of a day. But one thing has led to another since then. We've had rubber bullets being fired on the streets of Melbourne. We've had armoured vehicles being rolled out against protesters. And then once the police violence stopped, we had in excess of 250,000 people on the streets of Melbourne for the biggest political protest the city's ever
seen. Now, I certainly don't want to make this about me in any small way, but I suggested on this podcast, I said, if ever there were going to be a protest and 500,000 people should march up Collins Street to the steps of Parliament House about what's going on here, and this was about not being allowed to play golf, I said, I said, if ever there was a cause, this would be it. Well, I had the police arrive at my my foyer in my building saying I was inciting a crowd to protest. I said I was nothing of the sort. I just said I asked the question, a rhetorical question, if ever anyone was going to protest about the motives of this government, this would be a great thing. I said I gave no directions, no time, no place, no route, no anything, and they said, no, fair enough. They were doing the bidding of the government, which is another problem that we have, is that the government have co-opted the police to do work that they never meant to be able to do, 100%. Unless they're on some sort of contract with the government and fear getting sacked if they don't push it. So I'm sorry, I shouldn't have...
So this incitement issue is one that people really need to understand. What we have is a situation where yourself, myself, people like Zoe Bueller, the pregnant mum in, I believe it was Ballarat, who was arrested. These, Monica Smith and a bunch of others, they've used this tactic on a lot of people. They turn around and they say, right, you're not allowed to protest. You've encouraged people to protest, so we're going to slap you with incitement. Now, incitement, as is explained by Crystal Mitchell, a former police sergeant in the documentary, incitement was a crime that was developed and legislated so that if I encourage someone to hurt another person, I could get done for inciting that person to cause physical harm. It was intended for serious crimes. Now it's being used for people that want to speak up about a political issue. This is a real misuse of legislation that was sold to us on the basis that we need this so that we can hold people accountable if they incite other people to violence. Now the police are the ones using the violence, and we're getting slapped with incitement charges just for encouraging people to have a political point of view.
And the fact that we are the most livable city in the world is the laughing stock of the international community. I watch a lot of overseas news on a lot of different stations. I've been through them all: Al Jazeera, Fox, CNN, MSN,
Russia Today.
I do, and we are mentioned very regularly about just how things have gone in a free enterprise, democratic country. How ridiculous it's becoming.
Could I ask why I cannot get this on mainstream or the mainstream web?
Yeah, so it's in two places at the moment.
Yeah, so I'll just say I watched it last night, an hour 40 minutes, I think it was, YouTube. I just put in. So it is there.
You have to be logged into YouTube because it's age-restricted.
I did try the YouTube. I couldn't. Yeah. I had to get a young person to go in. And the reason, and I'll just go on a little bit further, there was another, I was put onto somebody else, a doctor in, I don't know, the western suburbs. I think he's might have been Poon. I got to have that wrong. The government came in and took his records. Now, I couldn't find that on the regular website. I had to go into one of these websites. Yeah. How many people are like you and this doctor that I saw that have made documentaries on COVID in Melbourne that are not getting the exposure through the mainstream?
Oh, look, there's not been a lot of work to my knowledge. There's been a huge amount of people who've done live streams, who have covered events, who have done analysis afterwards. Guys like Rukshan Fernando, Avi Yemeni, a bunch of others. Monica Smith did a lot of work early on. She's a bit quieter now. So there's a lot of these people, but they are regularly getting banned or shadow banned. So they might get removed off a platform entirely, or their reach might just get restricted down to next to nothing. I'll give you one idea just from my own page. So on Monday of this week, I was just going back through my metrics. I posted 6 posts on Facebook. I reached over 115,000 people. The following day, I posted 6 posts on Facebook. I reached less than 20,000. Now, I believe something that I posted on the Monday upset the Facebook algorithm, and they just said, right, we're just slashing your reach. We're just pulling your head.
So where's the head office of Facebook? I'm ignorant to all of this. Is it in Victoria? Or is there a branch in Victoria, or does it go to America? What happens?
They're an American company. And I think they have to have offices in the countries that they operate in, but they're impossible to get in touch with. You cannot reach a human being to discuss anything with them. And I'm someone who, over the 12 years that I've been a political commentator, I've spent money with Facebook on advertising, promoting videos that I've done, etc. So I'm a customer of theirs. They make money out of me. I still can't get to a human being.
So I've just brought up Googled YouTube on my phone, on my app, and the Battleground Melbourne doco is there, so you don't have
to... You've got to be logged in.
You've
got to be logged into YouTube. It's got to know who you are. Otherwise...
Is that why I couldn't get in?
Because it's age-restricted.
That means I'm logged in, doesn't it?
At some points, you've logged into YouTube on your phone or someone's done it for you, and it just remembers you.
Okay, so just make sure that it's working.
The other way to find it is to go to battlegroundmelbourne.com, and it's embedded in the web page.
Okay, so that's working. So I'm on YouTube. I just stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Come on. Yep. Okay. So I watch a lot of YouTube at home, so I'm obviously logged in. So it is available, but you've got to register, if you like.
Yeah, well, you've got to be logged into Facebook. We've had over 420,000 views on that version so far. Don mentioned that there are some revisions coming. I wasn't happy.
There is. Oh, that's good.
Absolutely, yeah. Now, I want to talk to you about what your thoughts are.
Yes.
But the main issue for me was I wasn't happy with the audio mix, the loudness of the music along with everything else and the way all of that was done at a technical level, I wasn't happy with. So that's the main revision that we're doing. We're also taking the opportunity to increase a few of the lower thirds and titles to keep viewers oriented as time passes.
What about content?
Content-wise, we don't have any major plans. There's a
because I've got a couple of queries that I'd like to ask you about content. One is, and I'll be blatant, what is your political affiliation? Because what I noticed was that there was a Black Lives, for example, we'll go back to the start, Black Lives Matter had a protest march. You did not cover that at all, and yet... They were going to march against the COVID later, and that was banned. You weren't allowed to do it yet. Black Lives Matter.
Yeah.
Then we had, you mentioned about the Anzac Day parade, where they didn't do the Anzac parade. They were allowed to play football. Yet there was a ceremony, Indigenous ceremony, approved, I think, by the City Council, and that went ahead. Yet you didn't mention that. So. Have you a bias towards the Indigenous, or are you giving a real true account of what's... And the other side was, you did not go into why the lockdown because of the three independents being medic... Ratner and what's the other one?
Samantha Ratner, Mandy Medic, and
Fiona Patton. Fiona Patton, right? Yep. All from there. Now they all got, and you did not mention what they got out of the government. One was rip-free races. The other was prostitution on the street, and the other was halving of fines for minors or whatever else over the COVID thing. So why didn't you put that type of content in?
Adam Somurek at the end gets a $300 million payout for his mates in the taxi industry to sell us all out at the end. So I've been a political commentator for 12 years, mostly in video, and. The most difficult decisions that I make in every single video is what to leave out. That's actually the most important thing that I do. There's 20 months of history involving 6.5 million people in the state. There is a lot that is going to have to hit the cutting room floor. For example, Daniel Andrews fall down the stairs.
But what's that got to do with the pandemic?
Sure, but I could have touched all sorts of things there. You're absolutely right. I didn't touch the black
lives. But that's... Hang on. With the Daniel Andrews thing, that was speculation, wasn't it, as to why. But these are what I gave you were concrete things that could be added to your documentary.
Yeah, right. So aiming for about an hour 45 and not beyond is important in terms of getting picked up by streaming platforms, getting listed in festivals and things like that that are part of the marketing. So we have a very hard time limit. I can't make a four-hour Ben-Hur epic. So therefore, I have to make a lot of choices about what to leave out. I made the decision, and this was a topic of discussion. I'm the director, so the final decision's with me, but I work with my team. I made a decision not to deal with the Black Lives Matter protests specifically, even though it highlighted the hypocrisy of the whole thing. It didn't actually speak to, in my opinion, it didn't actually speak to Daniel Andrews directly. So from probably the thing to understand about how I've approached this is, from my perspective, this is actually a psychological thriller about Daniel Andrews, the psychopath, and how he has manipulated and destroyed the state for his own political gain. That's actually what it's about. The protests, the police violence, all of that is actually the backdrop against which we observe Daniel Andrews and the psychopathy that, in my opinion, he possesses. So when I'm making these decisions, that's what I'm focused on, is what does this say about Daniel Andrews specifically? Now, the thing with the Black Lives Matter protest, it's not actually true, but the claim is, and it works from a political perspective, that the rules were different at the time. Now, it's a distinction without a difference. The rules were so minutely different at the time that it actually makes no difference. But it's a very easy thing for people to say, no, that's not a fair comparison. The rules were different at the time. They were ever so slightly different at the time. So you and I know that that's not a valid counter-argument, but it's an easy thing for people to swat aside and became one of the things that, for time, I just had to cut.
Well, I thought, anyway, those were my, I thought the editing, I thought everything, the content to that point was very good. They were my observations, and I congratulate you, but I just would have gone a bit harder about the, you know, how this corrupt government, even in the upper house, with these three people, it really was three people that closed us down.
Yeah, so that's a good and specific question. Initially, I actually planned to deal with that and Adam Somurek and how all of that played through to the end. That was actually originally a part of my plan with the documentary, and we filmed it accordingly. What became very evident to me was, as soon as you start to get technical, two things happen. Number one, you lose a lot of time explaining how the upper house works, the fact that there's a balance of power, the government needs these extra people, the significance of Adam Somurek coming back in, etc. You start to lose a lot of time explaining what are, relatively speaking, technicalities. And then when I actually did some test showings, test screenings to non-Australian audiences, their eyes glazed over very quickly. They couldn't care less about the technicalities of how our parliamentary system works. So again, I decided to gloss over some of those specifics.
So is it being picked up overseas?
That was my...
Yeah.
Yes, have you had any overseas interest in what you're doing? Because you would have a companion group of people in America who would be on exactly the same bent as you of what the nonsense going on over there at the
it's
minute.
It's going very well through through Canada.
Canada.
With a lot of what's going on in Canada with the truck convoys
and
so
forth. And the Trudeau. It's extraordinary. How people get into power like that man Trudeau, it's extraordinary.
Why is that not picked up on the 6 p.m. news here?
Again,
it doesn't suit their narrative.
They wouldn't want to be seen to be encouraging it.
I don't know anything about that. What are you talking about?
Okay, so in Canada right now, you've got somewhere in the order of 50,000 plus people and tens of thousands of trucks and four-wheel drives have driven into Ottawa.
100,000, they reckon?
It very probably is, yes. And have just driven into the main streets in front of Parliament House and parked up.
About mandate vaxxers, Don, and lockdowns. Exactly what TOFA's on about here. They're doing it in Canada.
Yep. And they've said, we're not leaving until the mandates are gone. Right, they've parked up, turned all the trucks off, turned all the vehicles off. Come and tow us if you've really got that many tow trucks.
And Justin Trudeau, he's vanished or something. Something's happened there.
He's claiming that he's COVID positive and that he's had to go into self-isolation as a result of that. Naturally, the truck drivers view it as COVID-19. He's got a serious bout of COVID-19, and he's run away from them because he doesn't want to face them. That's how they view it.
So, have you been in? intimidated by the Victorian government?
Well, he's been locked up, John.
Arrested. So here's how it works. Obviously, at the protests, they're all there with their riot gear on and weapons, and they're very willing to use them. They'll shoot tear gas at you. Yeah. Towards the end, they were shooting rubber bullets at us. You know, that is a absurd level of force to be using on people that brought slogans and signs and chants. So, yes, in that sense, at the protests themselves, absolutely. But also, they visited my home multiple times. So they visited my home on two occasions to try and intimidate me out of attending protests. So they would visit in the days before
the police.
Knocking on the door of my house where I live with my wife and two children, and wanting to hand over paperwork and basically tell me that if I go, then I'm going to be in lots of trouble. And then, of course, the third time they came was the time that they actually were there to arrest me for this absurdly trumped up crime, and I do that in air quotes, of incitement, encouraging people to exercise their human rights. What a terrible crime. And so that was the time when they actually took me away, and they... Look, in their defence, as I said to them in the car, they were the nicest human rights abusers that I'd ever met, right? They were actually at pains, I would say. They actually went out of their
way. They were just doing their job, those two.
They actually went beyond just doing their job to actually actively trying to do things to minimise the negative impact. They tried to call me twice before they knocked on the door because they didn't want to disturb the kids and everything else. Now, it was a blocked number, so I didn't answer it. You know, but that's just as an example. There were a number of things that they tried to do to minimise the impact on the family. So... I've got a lot of time for them personally, but at the same time, I'm just doing my job when you're abusing human rights.
And I'll tell you what else you deal with, Topher, is the devious nature of the people in power, and this happens in America and in Canada and here, is that you get infiltrated by plants from the government or the people who want to discredit your organisation by having people they plant dressed up as Nazis or racists or shouting out slogans, and they have nothing to do with your organisation, but because they're there, the media hone in on the one or two people that have been planted, and there is absolute evidence in America that this happens.
Does this happen here with you?
I believe it has. I don't have direct proof, but what we do have direct proof of is the media completely misrepresenting things that have happened. So take, for example, in Sydney, there was the guy that punched the horse, again, in air quotes.
Yep.
So there was a Sydney protest, and there was a chap, he was caught in the moment. A photographer got this moment where he's got his fist against
the
horse.
He was fending it off.
He's clearly punched it, right? And then you watch the video, and actually he has his hand open, and the horse is moving on him, and then he kind of closes his hand up as he's kind of fending off the nose of the horse to not get trampled on. At no time did he direct energy, force, or a punch into that horse, but the media ran with it for days before the counter narrative.
Like the Border Patrol people in America said they were whipping the immigrants, and they were trying to control the horses. They were actually touching the horses with the reins, and they said they were whipping the immigrants, and that was proven to be a lie as well. But the media went with that because it suited their narrative.
Correct. And this is where there's such short-sightedness in across our media, across our bureaucracy, within the police themselves, but also within our media. There is this short-sightedness of what can I whip up today in the media? What's going to get me headlines today? What's going to get my boss to be happy with me for the column inches that I submitted today? Not recognizing that they are actually writing their own death warrant because
The reporter?
The media, the mainstream media are destroying themselves right now because they're going for these cheap, easy shots that ultimately undermine their credibility. So we see this in the protest movement itself. People like Real Rukshan Fernando, he's a Sri Lankan immigrant who came here as a very, very young boy, and he's been working as a wedding photographer and a wedding videographer, and then he started to attend the protests, and he just started to live stream the protests, right? And there were multiple occasions where he would get 10,000, 50,000, sometimes 150,000 people watching his live streams all at the one time. Millions in the end, if you count all the views. He'd have 150,000 people watching, and then the news would come on that night and tell lies about what happened. But hundreds of thousands of people watched it live. They saw what really happened. So take, for example, the CFMEU protests. When Bill Shorten comes on and says, oh, it was a bunch of baby Nazis. When John Setka comes on to the radio and says, oh, they're just the scum of the earth as far as I'm concerned. They weren't even real union members. Well, guess what? Hundreds of thousands of people watched it play out in real time through Rukshan Fernando's camera. And they saw that they were actually union members. The very next day, Rukshan goes back and he starts asking people, oh, are you a baby neo-Nazi? Sorry, I'm looking for the baby neo-Nazis. Are there any baby neo-Nazis here? He's walking around, people are showing him their membership cards to prove that they're CFMEU members.
Really?
So, yes. So,
and this is not shown on mainstream?
Correct. So the media are shooting themselves in the foot and they haven't figured it out yet, I don't think. They don't realise that their nightly news, you know, hey, great, you get 500,000 viewers on your nightly news. Fantastic. I'm getting 500,000 viewers on a documentary that I've made. Rukshan's getting millions of viewers on his live streams at times. The independent media have become every bit as big and every bit as powerful as the mainstream media, and people actually trust them more.
So some of these people that you've mentioned, I don't know whether you, are you being picked up by overseas news outlets?
Bits and pieces. Bits and pieces. So I've been picked up by Newsmax in the US. They're essentially a smaller version of Fox, I guess you could say. And there's a chap there, Grant Stinchfield. He interviews me on a regular basis when he wants an update on what's happening in Australia. After this, I'm actually going and recording a podcast with James Dellingpole in the UK. So he's a very, very big blog over there, very, very big podcast over there. I've got an interview later in the week with a Russian outlet that want to know what's been happening here in Australia because they can't get accurate news in Russia, so they want to try and cut out the middleman and get it straight from me.
So you wonder Joe Rogan hasn't been on to you.
Well, look, he's a very, very big fish. He's the holy grail. Yep. Ultimately, it'd be great to get picked up by him. But, you know, I tell you what, though. I mean, I'm on Smarter Sam. That's pretty good, you know. I'll take that.
We have a fair
So how do we compare? I'm not aware of what happens overseas. Mm. Maybe you are. How do we compare with the rest of the world as far as the protests and the angst that has been shown by the citizens?
Yeah, so we are the most locked down city in the world. In terms of the duration and the depth of the lockdowns, we are number one. That's not a number one position I would like, but that's what we have.
Who's number two?
I don't actually know, but China are catching up again now. So they're attempting a COVID zero strategy, like what Daniel Andrews did in Victoria, but they're trying to do it with Omicron, the most infectious variant of the virus that we've had. So they're probably going to overtake us again. China will overtake us again.
As a lockdown?
As the most lockdown place in the world. Now, in terms of the protests, we've seen protests all over the world, but by and large, what we haven't seen is that level of police violence trying to shut the protests down. That hasn't been seen very often. It certainly has been seen in a few other places, but it hasn't been seen very often. And to see that level of violence sustained for 18 months and escalating to the point of armoured vehicles and rubber bullets and these sorts of things, that's not something that we've seen really in very many other parts of the world, and certainly not sustained for that amount of time. So, yeah.
And the disgrace of that is the government using the police forces, their acolytes, their...
As their brown shirts.
It's
their brown shirts. Now, and that's not just me, by the way. When Daniel Andrews proposed his permanent pandemic powers, the Law Institute of Victoria, came out and compared the powers and said the Gestapo would be happy with these powers.
Yep.
Now, that's coming from the Law Institute. 60 QCs came out and used equally strong language against it. So that's not just me, a little protest, a political commentator, whatever, making a brown shirt comparison. No, serious legal minds in Victoria have expressed very serious concerns about the powers that Daniel Andrews has given himself. And thanks to the sellouts that you mentioned earlier, Samantha Ratnam, Andy Medic, Adam Somurek and...
No, well, not Somurek selling out.
At the end, he sold out. He absolutely sold out.
Well, no, he voted against the lockdown. It was the cab driver... Fellow,
No, you're absolutely right. I'm my brain.
Well done, Don.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. What was the cab driver's name?
Yeah, he was in the Legislative Council. Yeah. Anyway, we know who he is.
You're right. Sorry, thank you for that. So these sellouts have actually now given Daniel Andrews powers that legal minds are comparing to the Gestapo. That's terrifying.
And so we mentioned that the CDC in America, which is their top health authority, mentioned in the New York Times, of all papers, that they've now conceded, this is the CDC, that masks are very ineffective against spreading COVID. Mm. Self-distancing is ridiculous, works not at all, absolutely ineffective. Mm-hmm. And yet we've been had this not... And COVID deaths, there's plenty of old people dying from COVID, but not because of it.
Yes.
They just manufacture and manipulate. And so this gets pointed out by various outlets, and this gets classed as misinformation.
Correct.
And therefore they round people like you up, and they don't round us up because we're just small fry. But and this is how it's headed. You cannot have a different opinion, and there's a hell of a lot of people that have a different opinion about what's going on with COVID and how effective it is and how critical and dangerous it is, and it is to certain amounts of people. But to close the whole community down, and the tennis was a fantastic example when they opened the whole stadium up, no one wore masks, no self-distancing, only for expediency's sake to make the event, which was a schmozzle had it not been rescued by the two people who played the singles finals, men and women, to make it an international success with the crowds. It was the most corrupt and dishonest thing you can do.
So here we have a situation where the government believes that it gets to play God in terms of what's true and what's not. Now, we see this, obviously, social media companies do it. We see Facebook doing it, Twitter doing it. They're censoring, they're doing their fact-checking, etc. But we now also have governments presuming to be able to tell us what's misinformation and what's not. That we have governments presuming to be able to tell us when we can use our human rights and when we can't. And this was my big thing. We have in Victoria the Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. And that is a piece of legislation that guarantees a number of things, including the right to gather for political purposes, to engage in protest, the right to run our businesses, the right to gather in worship, the right to be able to leave our homes and move around. These are all contained within the Victorian Charter of Human Rights and Responsibilities. And Daniel Andrews just presumes that he can switch that off anytime he feels like it. Well, what's the point of having rights if they're just completely subject to the whims of a politician?
It's like on a subscription service, isn't it? Exactly.
Well, that's exactly it. And that's, you know, David Limbrick, MP, says that in one of my interviews with him. He talks about, you know, we are now on a subscription service to our rights, where you don't get your rights unless you're up to date with your booster shots. Now, this essentially means that we don't have rights. At that point, human rights don't exist. All we have are privileges that get doled out to us by an all-powerful government. And that doesn't sound like a free country to me.
So Battleground Melbourne is the first of you aiming to do. And where is it all headed? Is it like throwing cream puffs at the town hall? Where will this get us, or is it
It's a small piece in a big puzzle. The documentary by itself is not going to change the world, but what it is doing, and I know this because people are getting in touch with me, is it's causing a lot of people who have been feeling a lot of despair and hopelessness to actually realise that they're not alone. That there are other people that think the same way and feel the same way, and a lot of people are getting in touch with me and thanking me for making the documentary because of what it's done for their headspace and their mental health. I'm also getting a lot of people getting in touch with me saying, I had no idea, I'm so sorry. I've had multiple people get in touch with me and say,
what do you mean sorry, apologising for what?
Apologising for not joining us. So I received an avalanche of hate. Just to give you one example, when I spoke at the very first anti-lockdown protest in April 2020, I've never received that level of abuse before. It's probably almost what Sam gets on a normal Tuesday. Probably almost that much abuse. And so I had to deal with that, obviously. That's not something that I'm particularly accustomed to, although I'm very used to it now. And I've had people coming back to me saying, I was one of those people, and I'm sorry. I'm sorry for what I said. I'm sorry that I didn't join you. Now that I've seen the documentary and all that time has passed and we've seen what's happened since, I get it now, and I'm sorry that I wasn't there.
So Topher, politically speaking, I suppose, the only way this gets changed is if the government gets rolled or they change the government. But people say, the government will get back in because the very people that get protected by these laws are the unions, the teachers, the ambulance, the fire brigade, and the public service. They're the people who generally elect a government because their numbers just give them a shoe-in to start. It's only the swinging voter who can't compete with those people who get the public handouts that the government offer to keep them in power.
So here's where I'm at with that, and I'm looking at all of this very, very closely. I'm a political commentator, so looking at these sorts of things is kind of what I do. We've had polls showing 30% or more of Victorians have already decided that they are not voting Liberal, Labor, Greens or Nationals.
30%. Hang on, 30% mainstream or the incumbents at the moment?
No, that they're not going to vote for any of those parties.
So they're their current parties?
They're the four biggest parties. Liberal, Labor, Nationals, Greens. They're the four biggest parties.
And I'm one of those.
Okay. So 30% of Victorians in some polls, the polls differ as you know, in some polls 30% of Victorians are already saying they're not voting for one of those.
Yeah,
polls.
That's
so
me.
What does that mean? Okay. So if you take out 30% of population... No,
that's and the new party, the one that's black and yellow, what's the...
The Victoria Party.
No, what is it?
There's a bunch. There's the UAP use black and yellow.
No, the what's the
Victoria Party.
No, what's the... No, the Australian...
United Australia Party?
Yes. Yeah, is that UAP, right? Is that what's his name?
So that's Clive Palmer. Yes, Clive Palmer. Kelly
is he's got
that.
A realistic chance of or not?
Let me address that in a second because there's a very specific thing, and I'm actually glad you asked because this is my main task as I see it between now and the federal election is to cover what I'm about to cover. So 30% of people have already decided they're not voting for the major parties. In addition to that, there's another 10% saying they're undecided. Which means there's only 60% of Victorians in some polls right now who are going to vote for any of the major parties. The major four. That includes the Greens. Now, you might sit there and go, oh, well, that's obviously 60% is a majority, so the minor parties aren't going to get any seats. I'm about to release a video on how preferential voting works. Once you get...
In the Legislative Council?
Federally, in the House of Reps, the lower house, right? Not the Senate. The Senate, we all kind of know you can get minor parties and stuff in the Senate because it's counted a little bit differently. The lower house is hard. You need 50% plus one of the votes to win a lower house seat. How do you do that if you've only got 30% of the votes? In a nutshell, because of the way the preferential system works, you tally up all the first preference votes and you take the person who got the least votes and you calculate their second preferences. So everyone put a 1 next to them, they put a 2 next to somebody else. So you move their votes into whoever they put a 2 next to. Then you eliminate the person who's now got the least votes and you do it again, a third counting, a fourth counting, until you're left with 3 parties. And this is where the crucial thing happens. The third party obviously gets eliminated. Out of those top three. So there's 3 parties, let's say Labor, Greens, and then let's say it's UAP, or let's say it's Liberal Democrats. Let's say it's any of these sort of more freedom-friendly minor parties. We don't have to get them to 50% plus one. We have to get them to be above the Liberal Party or above the Labor Party. Now, sounds hard, but not when there's 30% of people already planning on voting for minor parties. Here's the key. Because of our preferential system, this is the key to the entire thing. Everyone needs to vote for all of those minor parties, the freedom-friendly minor parties, before voting for any of the major parties. What that means, so if you look at your electorate and you've got, there's a Liberal Democrat candidate, there's a UAP candidate, there's a One Nation candidate, for crying out loud. I disagree with lots of their stuff, but they're good on COVID, right? You put all of the ones that are good on COVID before you put anybody else. And what that means is no matter what order people get eliminated in, those freedom-friendly votes coalesce into a single freedom-friendly minor party. And if we can get 30% of the votes into a single freedom-friendly minor party, and let's say Labor have 45% because they've picked up the Greens' preferences, we've got 30%. Where does that leave the Liberal Party? 25%, 28%? They're the one that gets eliminated. And their preferences will flow overwhelmingly to the freedom-friendly minor party because most people who put the Liberals at the top put the Labor at the bottom.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, we've stolen a seat.
Yes.
Now, this is not easy and it's not going to happen a lot, but I think it can happen a few times.
Tell me something else, just listening to you. You're talking about, so you're in social media.
Mm.
Have the government got a department or have they increased numbers to counter social media?
I reckon
I'm not interested in federally.
Spending a fortune on social media advertising and marketing. Daniel Andrews himself is spending an absolute freaking fortune.
No, I'm talking about countering you.
Not really, but understand it works the same way as it works with mainstream media, and that is this. The mainstream media's biggest advertising customer is the Victorian government. They are putting up, public service announcements about there's this infrastructure project, there's that grant that's being offered, there's this and there's that. They are advertising relentlessly on television and in print. Their biggest advertising client is the government. Now, are you going to let some up-and-coming journalist run a front-page story that's going to piss off your biggest advertising client?
Very good point, Topher.
The same thing happens on social media. Facebook make a fortune. YouTube make a fortune.
How do they make a fortune?
Because they're serving ads. So I can pay money to put an ad in front of you. If you want to watch my video or watch a video online, I can pay money and it serves you that ad before you can watch the video that you want to watch.
Oh,
right?
Really?
And so the Victorian government is spending a fortune on go and get your jab, go and get your booster. You know, they were for a while there, they were running ads, dob in your neighbour if they're not doing the right thing and they're having power. Like, these guys spend hundreds of millions of our tax dollars every single year. And whether they intend it to or not, the result is it buys them control. And these companies do not want to piss them off.
All right, so a question I've got. Mm. Look at us today. We've had 10,000 cases or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then look at us 12 months ago, 14 months ago. Mm. We were locked down for five cases. And today we can do pretty much whatever we want to do. Was the last 18 months just a waste of time?
Okay, I'm not being wise in hindsight. Let me tell you what I said at the time. You cannot get through a pandemic by locking down. All you can do is get stuck in the pandemic. You're not getting through it. Getting through it means people getting immunity.
Because at the moment, WA are just starting to go into their pandemic, which we're already out of.
Yeah, well, we're already on the way out.
Yeah.
Now, what I believe should have been done is we should have recognised, because in March 2020 we had the data, we should have recognised, based on the data out of Sweden at the Centre for Evidence-Based Medicine, that the elderly and people with comorbidities were more than 1,000 times more at risk than the young and people without comorbidities. That means we should have run a targeted approach, voluntary. I wouldn't have forced anyone to lock down if they didn't want to, but we should have provided the resources where those that were vulnerable and wanted to could lock down. They could get home delivery of everything. They could get support so that they didn't have to work and they could still pay their bills over
there. Were you saying that then, or are you saying that in hindsight?
No, I was saying that then. So if you look at the video that I released on the 31st of March 2020, all right, so this is the lockdowns that only just started at that point. I say exactly this in that video. So this is not me being wise in hindsight. We needed to target the protection to those who were clearly much more at risk and let everyone else go free. Specifically, let everyone else get COVID, because that's where herd immunity comes from. Immunity, getting through the pandemic, doesn't happen by locking everyone down and no one getting sick. Getting through the pandemic happens by people who are at the lowest risk getting sick and building that herd immunity with the minimum amount of risk possible.
And also the jabs. Like.
Well, okay, so that came later. Now, there's a couple of interesting things about this. Number one, I'm hugely pro-medical technology. I would love nothing more than for mRNA vaccines to have been incredibly effective, incredibly long-lasting, and a huge leap forward in vaccine technology. I would have loved that. Unfortunately, the data indicates that the effect is not terribly long-lasting. Mm. It doesn't appear to do much, if anything, at reducing infectiousness and the spread. It does appear to have a substantial reduction in the severity of symptoms and the likelihood of death for the individual that's vaccinated. That's what I believe we can say with some confidence on the vaccines at the moment. They don't last very long, they don't really reduce spread, but they do appear to have a meaningful reduction in the likelihood of death for someone who is vaccinated. Now, when they were first emerging, we were promised two doses and that's it. You will never get COVID. And that's it forever. Remember the scare campaigns around, oh, we don't know how long natural immunity lasts for. Natural immunity might only last for a few months. We need the vaccines. Even if you've had COVID, you're still going to need the vaccines because they'll give you the lasting protection. Well, that hasn't aged very well, has it? You know, we're in a situation now where people are lining up for boosters every single 3 months.
Well, there's ads out. I think they're just setting the scene for number four.
Yeah.
So yeah. Number four what?
Jab.
Yeah.
Have so you booster not seen number them? Two. They're just starting to trickle out.
Yeah.
Well, look, I was trying to find, I've just been scrolling through this. We read out the figures the government are spending on the public service and their public relations campaign. It's $36 billion I just can't find the figures, but we mentioned it last. I can't find the exact quote, but we mentioned it last week. So, so Don, it's been enlightening. Has it not? And Ivan, I have one question. It has nothing to do with...
Can I just say...
All right,
go on. I'm just fascinated. Where do you think this is going to play out? I can see Andrews now shutting down, looking to, you know, there's Molino coming forward and other people. He's not as prominent as what he was. We've got an election coming up at the end of the year. Mm. You make these predictions. You're a political commentator. How do you see the rest of this year playing out with the elections coming up?
Sure. So the most important factor in the Victorian state election is actually the federal election that comes first. if we can make sure that these minor parties pick up a bunch of lower house seats,
federally,
then panic is going to set in the Labor Party before they face their state election in November. Right? So if we can get a good result for these freedom-friendly minor parties and everyone remembers to vote for all of them before voting for anybody else on the ticket, then we can maybe, Australia-wide, these parties might pick up 5 or 6 seats. That, even though it's a small number of seats, that is going to send shockwaves through Australian politics. That hasn't happened in 2 generations that we've seen that in the lower house.
Now, Don, it's been, don't ask any more
What are you
questions.
Winding up?
Yeah, we're winding it up.
Well, I'm finding this fascinating.
It is fascinating. Just, well, what other fascinating questions can you ask, Topher?
Well, what I'm just finding out is the tactic of it going forward. So
we've got
the federal election coming up. We vote for the friendly minor party. That puts the shits up the Labor, which is here in Victoria.
Correct.
And then we may get a change.
What? That Daniel Andrews is very likely to have to pull his head in a big way. So the Labor Party rules don't allow them to roll a sitting leader unless they've just lost an election. So they're not going to move in and roll him the way that they have done in the Liberal Party, etc., or the way that they did with Rudd Gillard. That's over now, right? But what they can do is get on him and say, listen, buddy, you need to pull your head in because I'm in a marginal seat and I've just seen what's happened in the federal election. And if you keep on pissing people off, then we're going to get rolled here. So we can amp up a lot more pressure on Daniel Andrews to make sure that he doesn't have the freedom to just be locking us down and doing all that kind of nonsense that he's done to us for the last 2 years. We can put an end to that if we can pick up a couple of lower house seats in the federal election for freedom-friendly minor parties.
Right, you're done, Don. Ivan's got one, and then
last one for me.
Just because it doesn't interest you.
doesn't it? Why would Topher be here?
Oh, you're a...
You can't ask the same question more than 5 times.
Go?
Yes, go.
All right. All right, so you've been mixing around with people, no mask, no vax, blah, blah, blah. Mm. Have you had COVID?
I think I had it in 2020. The original, you know, I had it before it was cool.
Delta.
No, the original Alpha. So before Delta came along.
And how did you feel after that?
Oh, jeez. Fuck, I know. I know.
My wife and I both got pretty crook. And I was in bed, I think, for 3 days. And it stuck around for a week or two.
But pretty good now.
Took another week or two to shake it. Oh, no, there's no long lasting anything from it.
Now, Topher, this has nothing to do with what we're here for.
Okay.
I thought Topher might have been a stage... What sort of name is Topher? I thought I've been on the planet for 76 years, as a matter of fact. I thought I'd heard every... What is Topher?
Well, have you heard of the actor Topher Grace?
No.
Okay. Well, there you go.
There you are. Well, that's what it's
named
after.
That'd be why you haven't heard of it. No, so it's the last half of Christopher.
Well done.
So my dad is Christopher and I'm Christopher. How do you make sure that we're not getting confused?
No, that's good. Well done.
Yeah.
Now, Don.
Christopher Topher.
Mm. Well, Christopher. Well,
that's the most intelligent question you've asked all bloody day.
Well, Don.
A fucking name. And
Don, you've asked some very intelligent questions. I bet you've asked them, you've repeated 3 of them. Now, shut the fuck up. We've had enough of your questions and we've had enough of your phone ringing and you've been very good today. You've got Topher in and he's been extremely interesting and I've listened to everything he said, but there's only so many things you can ask him and there's so many answers you can give and repeat them. So you thank him, please.
Topher, it was terrific. I learnt a lot today, very articulate. I just hope you... We're at a bit of a conflict here with regard to your content. I just hope you get those other people that made the decisions within Victoria somewhere included into your content. But it's a very good documentary. Congratulations. Excellent. And I hope more people get on and have a look at it.
Can I do this now with your permission?
What do you think, Ivan?
Hit the button.
No, hang on. We'll have a discussion.
Go ahead, Topher. What?
Thank you kindly for having me. I do appreciate it. I'm doing more work all the time, so there will be an opportunity for me to cover some of the details in some other formats, but in the documentary, it pretty much is what it is. We're just tweaking what it is.
No one can hear me because I'm not on microphone. I'm not doing this, Don, unless you give me permission.
Go!
Your fucking phone rings again, I'll smash in the head with it.
You can't be serious, man.